Greetings, podcast listeners. After a brief hiatus owed to some technical difficulties here at the podcast office, the Colorado Review podcast is back in full swing. My name's Daniel Schoening.
And I'm Evan Senny.
And joining us today is associate editor here at the Colorado Review, Alice Stouffer. Hi, Alice.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm quite well. How are you?
Doing really well. We're sharing two mics, so Evan and I are darn close in this office.
And I'm doing okay.
So Alice is here in part because she is a glowing writer, wonderful editor here at the Colorado Review, and one who is soon to leave us, a third year in the MFA program, and so we're trying to get as much time with her as we can, but also because she is the recent winner of Crazy Horse's short fiction contest, Crazy Shorts. And Alice, what's the title of the submission that won the contest?
The story is called Estuaries.
Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. It's a 500-word flash piece. It takes place in Georgia, sort of along the coast where there are a lot of lakes and rivers snaking out to the ocean. And it's about a group of girls who spend a summer eventually growing apart.
That sounds lovely. And where can folks read it, should they want to?
It will be in the spring issue of the journal, issue 95 of Crazy Horse, and may appear online before then.
Wonderful. Well, this uniquely predisposes you to offer insight into both sides of the publishing world, which hopefully we're going to pick your brain about as we proceed in this podcast.
Alice is basically an expert on all parts of the process because she wrote this, workshopped it, sent it out, and won, and she reads at Colorado Review. She does it all.
So to that end, Alice, what has working at the Center for Literary Publishing and on the Colorado Review been like these last 3 years?
Copy editing and proofreading have been extremely helpful, and I've been grateful to have that experience and to know how much work goes into getting a journal ready for publication. But I think something that's been really beneficial to my own submission process is just looking at the queue and seeing the kinds of stories that we receive, getting a good sense for what stories are ready and which are almost ready and which are not ready at all, knowing that a reader in a queue has very many stories to get through. And so making sure that in my own work, the first couple of pages, the first couple of paragraphs or sentences are really as polished as they possibly can be to hopefully buy myself some more time with a reader at a magazine has been really helpful.
I wonder, related to that, is there anything in particular that you look to do in the first page or two in your writing? Like thinking about stakes or stuff with language that might really stand out?
I think I'm most concerned about establishing the voice as quickly as possible of the piece, making sure that the character, whether they're a first-person narrator or even a third-person narrator who is close, has a personality that's pretty easily recognizable and can be picked up on really quickly. And stakes, too, establishing that in the first paragraph, if possible. But I'm usually less worried about getting plot moving and more worried about, is the setting really clear and is the voice distinct and engaging?
For those listening, are there any more stylistic choices, any surface level things that might be either conscious or unconscious indicators to you that this might not be a piece that's fully polished, fully realized right off the bat?
Yes. The surface things are easy. And I tell my students really regularly not to make sort of these common mistakes, but font choice does matter. Knowing sort of basic format of what a submission should look like, having it look professional so that I know the writer knows what they're doing. But style-wise, I think there are some small things that we tend to think of as rules in fiction because fiction tends to be so rules-based. So a story that starts immediately in very talking headsy dialogue, I know probably will need a couple more revisions. It probably has other rules that it has broken later in the draft that are not serving the story. small things like that, just when I'm picking up on something that I know is a broken rule and doesn't seem to be breaking it to exceptional effect within the first page, is usually a good indicator that the writer probably has a little more work to do on the story.
You said you could tell sometimes from the dialogue or something stylistic at the beginning that there are a couple more revisions needed. And you've had some success in contests. And I wondered, how many times do you think you revise before you send one of those pieces out?
It depends on the piece, which is not very helpful in terms of giving advice to other writers who are in the process of submitting their own work. For Estuaries, I think that had three drafts before I felt like it was ready to go to contest submissions. Some are significantly more than three, some are less. It sort of depends on how much of the draft I've gotten right on the first try, and whether I trust the readers who are telling me how much of it is right on the first try.
So you mentioned just now the importance of having readers that are responding honestly to your first drafts and saying what proportion of it is working. I'm wondering for our listeners out there if you have any advice as to how you accumulated those readers, how you found people perhaps through mechanisms other than an MFA program that are attuned to your work, willing to give constructive feedback, but also help to generate new work.
Before coming to the MFA, I took writing classes in the city where I was living, just sort of looking for those very readers. It was difficult at first to recognize which were my readers and which knew the things that were important to me in the stories that would come across, which I think is something we maybe don't think about when we're first starting writing, that your work is yours and you won't necessarily have a reader that is perfect for you, that would be perfect for anyone else. So you really, it's sort of that soulmate kind of thing. You have to find the person who understands what it is you're trying to do and can tell you when you're achieving it or not. So it took maybe a year or two of taking classes, going to writing meetups, just staying on Craigslist and looking for people who were looking to do more serious writing, to find a small group of folks who became my writing group, who really understood what it was that I wanted to do with my work and whose feedback I could trust. Part of the benefit of the MFA is those readers are sort of built into the program. You spend a couple of years with them, and so you really get to learn whose style is similar to yours, whose concerns are similar. But outside of the MFA, there's still avenues to find those people. It just takes maybe a little more legwork than it does in the MFA.
Hmm. And that might be something to keep in mind for people who are submitting to magazines like the Colorado Review. It's important that the draft becomes as good as it can be, but then you have to keep in mind we're all very dedicated readers here, and we're doing our best, but you may have to find a person who is sort of your person there. And so if it's not working at one magazine, it may work at another, where you have a reader who happens to really connect with your story.
So Alice, obviously you're a very gifted fiction writer, but I also understand that your MFA thesis, which you are soon to defend, is a hybrid piece that straddles both creative nonfiction and fiction, as two genres that frequently draw a bright line between them, or some folks within those genres want a bright line between them. I was wondering if you could speak to what the experience has been like trying to draw connections between the two, employ mechanisms from both, and whether you've run into roadblocks either in terms of your personal growth or ethics or how to employ those mechanisms organically in your piece, or external ones where perhaps the publishing world is less amenable to those lines being blurred.
I took a class this past spring that was centered around hybridity, and I've been interested in the essay as a form for a long time, although have felt that as a fiction writer, it's sort of not okay for me to explore essay, even though it is a prose genre, because of the hard line between that you're speaking to, that the projects between essaying and fiction writing seem very different. The explorations seem, to people who like to categorize, to be very different. And this hybrid class I took was really helpful in thinking about the ways that categorization can be inherently problematic, that our need to box things says more about our anxiety about not being able to understand the world than it does about the things themselves. So for my thesis, it felt important to include both pieces of prose that people who like definitions would call essays and pieces of prose that are not at all engaged with personal experiences that I have had, so are more easily able to be called fiction. And I think part of the process of putting that thesis together has been figuring out what connections I can draw between those things, because both are obviously coming from me and from my brain and must have some kind of connection between them. And the fun part of this thesis and the hard part, and probably what will be most rewarding, is figuring out what it is that I'm interested in as a writer in both the essays and the fiction, and seeing the way that those things sort of, I don't know, are on a similar wavelength. Feels like a very therapeutic process to put this thesis together. In terms of thinking about, is there a venue for publishing something like this, either as the full collection or pieces, I've been looking for places that are more open to work that is hybrid. But it's hard to find places that are comfortable accepting pieces that, especially nonfiction pieces that maybe include elements of speculation that cannot be verified as true.
I wonder, you've said that one thing that's helped you is finding readers who can give you good advice about when a piece is ready. Do you go to the same readers for fiction and nonfiction? Or when you've given it to larger groups, have you found that the same people are good at identifying the strong points and weak points of both those?
I have tended, and I'm just realizing this, to not go to the same people for the fiction and the nonfiction. I think that has stemmed from trying to give essays to people who read my fiction really well and having them be hesitant to engage with an essay as opposed to a story. Maybe just discomfort in learning too much about me in that process. But I think the readers that I've found for the essays tend to be more thinking readers than feeling readers. I think for my fiction, getting readers that are picking up on sort of the emotional arc of the piece is really important. But the essays that I've been interested in writing and am trying to draft are usually asking questions that have to do with feelings, but are putting more of that thinking, that mind on the page. And so finding a reader for that who's more comfortable engaging with the thoughts that are circulating has been important.
And that might be a good time to point out that when we're reading at the CLP, for the most part, the fiction readers and the nonfiction readers are separate, but in some cases we have people who read both. For example, I read both, and I can say that I am, I think, looking for something a bit different in nonfiction. Just like Alice was saying, it's sort of a mind on the page, and there's a central question, and it's essaying forth, and I'm looking to see how that progresses, where in fiction I'm looking for a bit more of an arc and definitely a kind of fictive space that feels different from the space within which nonfiction operates.
I wonder if there are contemporary writers or writers of the past that you've leaned on in trying to explore this new process, if others have bridged that gap that you found helpful, whose lead you might have followed or diverted from.
I think the person who immediately comes to mind is probably the most obvious writer, but Maggie Nelson. I have read Bluettes so many times and recently read The Argonauts, and just the way that her writing feels like no matter what she's doing, it's her, I think is part of what attracts me to hybridity, whether the sort of the small crots in Bluettes feel more poetic or more essay, whether they feel more critical or more personal. Her voice is so strong. And there's just like a warmth and an aliveness to it that I don't care anymore what genre it is. That stops being a question that interests me, and I just want to engage with this voice that's very distinct.
That's really interesting. And I think that speaks to the elements of writing that might exceed those more formal or mechanistic questions that we were talking about earlier for those submitting to contests, for those submitting to journals, where certainly one must or one ought to tick all those boxes of having formal sensibilities and page numbers and beginning in a place that's grounded and clear. But once you get beyond that point, it's much harder to pin down whatever's operating to make that voice so compelling, to make what's being said something that the reader can't help but attune themselves to.
Yeah, and Alice and I have been talking a lot recently about this sort of problem, which is that there are elements of craft, which we've discussed already in this episode, that are very important. But then it feels like beyond that, there's something that we've called the thing. And a really good piece has the thing, and the thing maybe relates to voice, and it's something that sort of pulses and feels alive and feels important in a piece. And it's very hard to pin it down, but as a reader, you can tell when you found it. And we've talked about how you might teach that and how you might notice it in your writing or in others' writing and ultimately produce it. And so one question that I have is, does it feel like that pursuit of the thing? We've talked about how it feels like it may be the same for a person across the pieces that they write. Do you feel that that's true for you and even across the genres that you write in?
I feel like I've been thinking a lot about this lately, that the project of writing is ultimately one of trying to communicate with another real live human person. And I am a real live human person. And so I think for me, whatever the thing is, has something to do with making a bridge between those two people. And I think you're right that it probably doesn't have much to do with craft. That makes it scary that it's not able to be pinned down to my following all of the rules correctly. But I think when I'm evaluating my own work and thinking about sending it out and looking to see if a piece has the thing, I am not always best at feeling it, but hope that the readers who are in my life are good at feeling it. But if there's some kind of bridge there, if that bridge feels small and the connection feels very close, then I have a sense that the thing is there, that something is working correctly. And I hope that both the essays that I'm writing and the stories that I'm writing are working towards making that bridge shorter, even if they don't have it in that first draft, I hope that it's something that can develop as a piece develops.
And I can certainly say that I've had an opportunity to read a lot of Alice's work, and she has the thing more often than anyone I've been able to work with before. And so that's what prompted that discussion initially. And I think one thing that's kind of interesting is to think of craft as tools with which to sort of excavate the thing and bring it to the surface. And I think we all have something to say. We have something that feels urgent, and we have to use the craft tools to allow that to be shared and shorten that bridge between us and other people. And there was even, we had a staff meeting at the CLP recently, and our fiction editor, Stephen Schwartz, he didn't call it the thing, but he said, we don't have an aesthetic here. There's not some particular type of story that I'm looking for. He said, I want something that's good. I want you to be excited about a story. I want you to want to see it out in the world. And I think that relates to the thing too. When we're going through the queue, there's a lot of stories that are pretty good, but there are some that have a thing that is rising to the surface, and it's tough to isolate that and to bring it out in a story, but I think it's really important. And I think what Alice has been talking about in terms of having good readers, people that you trust and who can identify it and help you shape it, is really important.
This brings to mind Malcolm Gladwell's concept of those 10,000 hours that are prerequisite for one being a master in whatever given field or craft. And I wonder if when one moves past craft or is so wrapped up in craft or knows it so intimately that it becomes secondary to that deeper consideration, if that is the point at which you really can have access on that thing. I'm wondering, Alice, if when you look back at work you've written in the past or when you think about your growth as a writer, if there is a point at which you feel you've arrived at or arrived at more frequently, those elements that are harder to pin down but really speak to a piece that's operating well.
In the process of putting my thesis together, I did revisit very many old stories that I'd written, some of them as old as undergraduate stories, some of them just a few years before the MFA, just to see if there was anything that I would be surprised by that was salvageable, that I could maybe develop now that I have some better craft tools under my belt. And looking back at those old stories, it just feels very clear that I am a different person and a very different writer than I was when I wrote them. I think some of the ideas are still interesting to me, and I'd like to maybe rewrite those stories in the future. But whatever it is that I've developed, whether it's just a better sense of how to shape a story or what characters belong in the forefront of my stories, some kind of new awareness that's developed maybe over the past year or so, it feels very new, at least. I did not have that awareness before, and I don't know how exactly I got it. I suspect probably just reading more and continuing to put in the work and finding really good readers and reading other people's work and being better able to identify what it is that they're trying to do and whether their pieces have the thing. I think that's all sort of shaped the awareness that now makes me blush when I look back on things I wrote. Even, you know, at the start of the MFA, some of those stories are pretty cringeworthy to me now.
Sometimes in poetry or in our poetry classes, one of our professors, Camille Dungy, will come in and say, don't write about this flower this week, or beware, I've just read 6 poems that include this particular species of tree. And there's funny things like that where our concerns across kind of like the tidal movements of a craft, of a genre, often circle one another or move in the same direction, sometimes for obvious reasons, sometimes inexplicably. Do you have a sense of what those tidal movements in fiction might be of late, having immersed yourself in the queue, having read works from your contemporaries, and either as points of caution for those listening that perhaps they don't want to enter their voice into a muddied mix with many in them already, or something into which someone would want to write to participate in that conversation? Are there themes or concerns or even images that recur for you?
This semester especially, I have noticed an uptick in stories that are often in the first person and seem to be interested in tackling questions of male privilege, white privilege, general entitlement, class, which I think makes sense in our present moment that stories are wanting to engage with those questions. But often in these stories that I've encountered in the queue, I will have usually a first-person protagonist who is enacting the very thing that the story seems to want to critique. A character who is misogynistic, a character who doesn't seem to be able to reckon with their own privilege, who is moving about in the world in a way that is unthinking. And that has consequences in the story, that the writer seems not to be dealing with in a productive way, not entering into the conversation in a way that adds anything new or, I don't know, is doing anything different, feels necessary in any way. Which is not to say that this is not an important conversation to enter into. I think we, as a nation, have a lot of thinking and reckoning to do when it comes to questions of who is in power, whose stories get to be told, how to responsibly use power that you are born with, that you haven't really worked to deserve. But I would be wary as a writer of sending out work that is not thoughtfully engaging with those questions. I think a recommendation I might have to those writers would be to read more widely and think about the ways that this story that you want to tell is entering into that conversation. Is it adding something new or different? Are you the best person to be entering the conversation at this time, or is now a good time for you to sit back and listen and do more reading?
And maybe there's a question there of, is this something that is close to you and that you've grappled with? Because it seems that certain writers you might be talking about have just addressed this in their stories because it's a thing that's happening, but they haven't actually really considered it or dealt with it. So it may be that the extent to which you're the right person might depend on the extent to which you've done real work or this has affected your life, so that you can come from a place of some experience or knowledge or thoughtfulness as opposed to just tacking it on in a story.
Yeah, I feel wary of sort of armchair analyzing any of the writers in our queue. For the most part, I'm just looking at the work. I'm not thinking about the contributor. I'm usually not even reading most of the cover letter they sent because it's the story that's important. But I think to your point, if you are perhaps a male writer or a white writer and are interested in tackling questions of power, especially, just taking a minute to pause before hitting that submit button and asking, you know, is the story really accomplishing the thing that I want it to accomplish? Is it actually offering a real critique, or is it just depicting a problem that other people already know exists?
Alice, it's been such a pleasure to have you on today. Do you have any lingering recommendations you might have for those that are submitting their works to publications like the Colorado Review, to literary prizes like the ones you've been successful in of late?
I recently wrote a blog post about this topic exactly.
Oh.
That you can find on the Colorado Review's website. And it gives some tips and tricks for first-time submitters, or not necessarily first-time submitters, but people who are maybe early in their submission process. Sort of the highlights of that would be that it's really important to find journals that you really love and would be over the moon to be published in. I would recommend never sending work to a place that if you received a letter of acceptance from them, you would be like, oh, that's nice. Only send to places that will get you jumping up and down and really excited that they've accepted your work. The post also covers some recommendations for knowing when a piece that you're working on, a poem, a story, an essay, is ready, how to go about submitting that to various journals, and also some recommendations for what to do while you're waiting to hear back, which for all of us can be a very anxious time. But I think ultimately the biggest piece of advice is just keep plugging away at it. Know that all of us get rejections. I have gotten very many rejections, and that's part of what it is to be a part of this community, is that sometimes you'll be jumping up and down and really excited and the piece will land somewhere perfect, and sometimes it won't. And that's not always a reflection of you or your work. Sometimes it's just that the stars are not aligning.
Wonderful. Thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
This has been Evan Senny
and Daniel Schoening. Thank you for joining us for the November edition of the Colorado Review podcast. We'll see you all here in December.